We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
To be honest, I would put myself in the same category as D-Wade.
Now Artest has jumped over the scorer's table. Artest is in the stands.
This man was a bona fide scrub. He can't play.
When I go to the writers to tell me who can guard in this league, I'll put a gun to my own head.
Welcome to the Tuesday, December 11th edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast, sponsored by DraftKings. My name is Joe Bartle, and alongside me, of course, as always, is Google Me Alex Barutha. We've had an absence the last 2 weeks of this rendition of the RotoWire NBA podcast. Of course, we've had the Wednesday and Friday shows, and Shannon's been talking about boners quite a bit and all that stuff. But you and I specifically have missed time. I was completely sick. I was like literally bound to the couch, it felt like, for 3 days last week, and then another work obligations got in the week before. So we're finally getting started. And of course, there's a lot of different news going on even since Friday that we can kind of discuss, which is great.
It is. Yeah, very busy weekend. When I was doing the Friday pod, we were worried about kind of the lack of news, because it's that point in the season where it's like between the start of the season and the All-Star break, and every team usually kind of settles in. The trades usually don't happen around this time. But yeah, a lot's happened since Friday. It's a big weekend for the NBA.
Well, you talk about that trades usually don't happen during this time. Of course, we're waiting on a lot of, I think it's the end of this week, either Thursday or Friday, that free agents who have signed contracts over the offseason are able to be traded. So that'll come up in importance for Trevor Reason when we talk about him a little bit later. But right. A trade that did occur this week and literally destroyed me just on a personal level, and we'll get to that more. The Bucks moved John Henson, Matthew Dellavedova, a protected first and second round picks to the Cavaliers for George Hill, and then Sam Decker, who was originally supposed to be coming to the Bucks, right, got rerouted to the Wizards, and we ended up getting Jason Smith. We being the Bucks ended up getting Jason Smith in that deal. So of course, the optics, we save a bunch of money. Again, we being the Bucks save a lot of money on John Henson, who was playing better this season, but of course is going to be out for almost the entirety of the year.
Pretty much.
It was a wrist injury, right?
Yeah, he just just tore his wrist, basically.
Yeah, so he was going to be out most of the year. Matthew Dellavedova has been really, at best, the third guard on the team in whatever capacity you want, either point guard or shooting guard, and was getting paid about $12 million a year, and it didn't make a lot of sense. So those are both expiring contracts at the end of this season. Well, it's in two seasons, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's also money, next year.
Yeah, the money then, as a part of getting rid of those guys, we might be able to sign Chris Middleton or Eric Bledsoe or even Brooke Lopez to contract extensions this offseason as a part of getting rid of that money. Of course, for the Cavs, we already know they're really bad. They're right. Just trying to accumulate picks, assets, whatever it might be. And this is probably the best way to do it, right? By taking on salary and the fact that they get Dellavedova back, who is a crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
That really was a shrewd move on their part to acquire somebody that didn't make a lot of sense for the Bucks' plans, but certainly makes a lot of sense for what they're trying to do.
Yeah, it was a great, I won't call it a PR move, because the move makes sense beyond that.
Yeah, no,
you know, but
it was a smart move.
And having Dellavedova back, he should actually play for them too, and probably be a solid like mentor for Colin Sexton. They're both kind of like those more scrappy, defensive-minded players. And so that'll be interesting to see. John Henson is like an interesting flyer to also take on. Like, he's overpaid, but it doesn't matter when you're Cleveland. They have like Ante Zizic kind of sitting in there. I mean, they're probably hoping that, you know, Henson maybe becomes something next year.
Right. This is a rejuvenation move, right? Like, they could maybe end up getting him to be a competent backup big man behind Tristan Thompson. Cause I imagine Tristan is going to be at least a plan for the next year or two. So you get a guy like John Henson, who maybe you can turn around for a second round pick to somebody who needs some defensive abilities or maybe some 3-point shooting outside next year when he's fully healthy. That to me is what it seemed like it would be.
Right. And yeah, good, you know, quality backup big men are pretty hard to come by.
Right.
Playoff teams are always looking for somebody to eat like 15 minutes at that position. And yeah, you were talking about Tristan Thompson. His contract is up after next year.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe they'd look to move Tristan Thompson also, and then John Henson could play a bunch of minutes.
My only thought with that, and this is kind of semantics, because we don't know what we're going to get out of the Cavs this season, or really next season too, is that Tristan Thompson's contract, I believe, is going to be higher than John Henson's. So it would be likely harder to move to a contending team in that scenario. Whereas John Henson, for $12 million for a backup guy, it's not the worst thing in the world, and that's what I've been telling myself for like 3 years now for the Bucks. So I'm very, very happy we moved John Henson. I'm very, very sad as a Matthew Dellavedova lover, to the point where I bought an official Matthew Dellavedova Bucks jersey.
I appreciate that.
He is my spirit animal. He's everything that I want in an NBA player. He's everything that I am as a current basketball player. The scrappy guy that goes and drinks coffee at halftime. That is the quintessential Joe Bartle basketball player. And I'm disappointed to see him leave. I liked him. I liked what he brought to the team, but he was overpaid.
Right.
I mean, certainly there's no argument there. And as a huge supporter of Dellavedova, I can see right now that he's overpaid. But it'll be interesting to see if the Bucks can't do anything with that money. And to me, re-signing a Chris Middleton or Eric Bledsoe isn't exactly doing something with that money. Like, I want them to go get a free agent if that's the case. And if they're unable to do that, and I understand Milwaukee's not always a great market for some people, I feel like this could end up being a bad trade in the long run for the Bucks.
I think it's a lot of it kind of gives the Bucks some insurance. I mean, so they can keep George Hill if they want. They probably won't for next year, because he's set to make $18 million, but he has a guarantee date, or it's like he's only guaranteed $1 million after like July 3rd. So it's like the Bucks can just cut George Hill next year and free up all that money. And I think so what it does is, like, I think they'll try everything. The Bucks will try as hard as possible to keep Chris Middleton. I think that's their main goal. Because he's a legitimate, like, number, probably you want him to be like your third best player.
Right.
Theoretically. I think they're pretty, at least how I feel as a Bucks fan, and just kind of how the team is constructed with Giannis doing so much ball handling, stuff like that. I feel like they're probably fine letting Bledsoe go if there's an offer on the table they just aren't super comfortable with. I think they'd be fine letting him go because they have Brogdon, and they might want to bring in a different kind of point guard than Bledsoe, who's not a great 3-point shooter, and has like games where he's just not great. I just don't know if he's a great fit with Giannis. So I think their big goal is to keep Giannis, keep Middleton, and then everything else is kind of up in the air. They try to get a third star. If they can't nab a third star, just try to re-sign everybody and just run it back that way.
It just feels like what the Raptors did even years before, when they had Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, where it was, okay, these guys are our two stars. We know we need a third. Obviously, we can't hurdle LeBron. LeBron is a supernova in the Eastern Conference. We struggle with them. Okay, they made the decision to go get a Kawhi Leonard, and it's paid dividends already this season. Whether he leaves or not, okay, I think the optics of that, you have to kind of weigh it both ways. But right now, it's paying off in dividends. I just don't know, again, if re-signing Chris Middleton is the main priority and why this trade happened, I'm uncomfortable with that prospect. And that's my concern with it. I need something else more. Whether it is that third star, it can be different Eric Bledsoe. Certainly not re-signing Eric Bledsoe and Middleton. I don't think that would be a win. But get me somebody different like that, that we're, maybe we can change the dynamic of the Bucks season. Right now they are a 1 or 2 or 3 seed in the Eastern Conference.
Right.
But they face the Warriors, they're going to lose, I would imagine, in a 7-game series. If the Warriors weren't even constructed like they are now, if they were the Warriors before Kevin Durant, do you think the Bucks would beat them?
It's very possible. I mean, the Bucks just had a huge win over Toronto the other night. Even last year, they lost in the first round, but they took Boston to 7 games. I know it wasn't their whole team, everything like that, but this Bucks team was also, was coached by, like...
yes. Whatever the coaches were for the Bucks last season.
Right, it was Jason Kidd and Joe Prunty. Like, you had Joe Prunty coaching in the playoffs, and this team still was, it was a 500 team with Joe Prunty coaching, and they still took Boston to 7 games. So it's like, I have a ton of confidence in the Bucks making the NBA finals. They blew out the Warriors earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. In that first meeting, Draymond wasn't playing though. I don't think Curry was playing.
Well, Draymond didn't play this last game either.
Right. So, I mean, I would still assume the Bucks would lose in the finals, but, this is very as constructed with Mike Budenholzer as coach, this is a finals caliber team. So if the worst case scenario is bringing this back again, I think you're fine.
I think I'm in the wait and see mode. And maybe that's because I'm a jaded Wisconsin fan. Like we've seen the college basketball version of the Badgers do really well, get so close to actually winning the championship and not get there. Mm. We saw the Brewers just this season, like 2 runs away from making it to the World Series, something that we haven't done since the 1980s. And of course the Packers, for as long as we've had with Aaron Rodgers, have only made 1 Super Bowl appearance. I guess I just, that's where I think I'm coming from, almost from a jaded Wisconsin fan perspective than analyzing basketball here. I agree with you. Like that roster and that coach, this is a team that has a chance to make it to the finals, but I don't know if I want a chance. Like, there's so many different things that LeBron can do or other superstars can do that can ruin just that chance that there's possibilities out there. So that's where I'm looking at it from. And that first round pick, if the Bucks really do poorly, that could end up being something that is a quality asset down the road, particularly with the college players and high school players being reintroduced into the NBA draft format in 2021.
That's true. The picks are pretty solidly protected. I was actually surprised at how protected they were. I thought Cleveland would be more aggressive with trying to get, I guess, less protection. The Bucks, I'm when I saw the protections as a Bucks fan, I was not worried about what happens in 2021. If because I think it's 1 through 5 or 1 through 8 protected in 2021, right, which is theoretically the first year, or is it 21, 22? One of the years Giannis could be gone. Theoretically, it's the year that Giannis could leave in free agency. The Bucks, I think it's still 1 through 5 protected, and you would think the Bucks would be horrible. Right. So I felt all right about that. You just never know what happens during an NBA season. So it's I understand why they're going win now mode. You kind of have to pick one or the other when you're in this spot. I mean, you're going to have to just keep up picks to stay competitive because your title window as an NBA team is 3 years usually, before financial restrictions, players' ages, injuries start to pile up. Most teams, the Warriors don't even count, most teams get 3 years at it, and then after that it's just you're trying to put the pieces back together or completely tank.
Well, you're right, you never know what's going to happen in the NBA. Case in point, the Denver Nuggets are sitting near the top of the Western Conference. I think they're tied for first place or right around there with an 18-9 record with the Warriors, who are 19-9, and the Thunder, who are 17-8. Paul Millsap broke his toe, extending his absence, and we don't really know how long. And of course, Gary Harris is out 3 to 4 weeks. Their third best player right now, the Nuggets, is Trey Lyles. Hernan Gomez. Like, they had to sign Nick Young earlier to provide some more offensive explosiveness to this team. What should we make of the Nuggets, A, in the Western Conference, that I think right now separating the top to the bottom is two games? Like, I mean, first right. eighth seed is two games, and we're still only like quarter away this season. We haven't gotten to what people a lot of really call the official start to the NBA season, which is Christmas. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, do you think the Nuggets are due to acquire a player? Do you think this is kind of for real, or are they going to slip off at some point down the road?
The Nuggets are a really interesting team right now. Because, I mean, they're just right now, they're almost like a two-man crew of Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, who are both great players. But when you are playing in the Western Conference and those are going to be your guys for like about a month, I think Will Barton is coming back relatively soon. But that's not great. I think their hope is that they can go 500 as long as Millsap and Harris are out. I think they should be in the market for trades. Like, I think they should be in the Trevor Ariza sweepstakes, because I think they need an actual wing defender. Will Barton's not really a wing defender. Paul Millsap's not really a wing defender. Gary Harris is probably just going to guard the shooting guard on most nights. You wouldn't want Gary Harris guarding Kawhi Leonard. And I don't hear, you know, it doesn't get brought up a lot, but at this point you have to kind of have a conversation about what's going to happen with Paul Millsap. He turns 34 this year. He has a $30 million team option next year. And now last year he had a long-term injury. This year he's out for a month. They kind of have Trey Lyles kind of just sitting there and waiting. They got Juan Hernan Gomez. It's like, do you just let Paul Millsap go? Do you try to trade? Like, what do you do with that? Like, you do have to, cause he doesn't fit the age range of the team. It's just a really, it's a very nuanced situation right now in Denver.
Well, I'll give you this. While I'm talking, I want you to look at the Denver Nuggets cap situation for next year, because the first question you have to ask yourself with Paul Millsap, you know, he's still a quality talent. I understand he's 34 years old. He's been a bit injury prone the last 2 years, but if you're having a $30 million team option and you were to say, okay, no, we don't want Paul Millsap back next year, what are you doing with that $30 million? Are you opening up another opportunity to acquire a star? Or do you not even have enough money to bring anybody back in that situation? Like, that's the first question I have when it comes to, yes, Paul Millsap comes back, or no, he doesn't.
I think if you are making the decision or strongly considering letting Millsap go, you have to do everything you can to trade Mason Plumlee and get those $14 million off, like, this year. Because he'll make $14 million next year, and he's fine. He's a good player, good backup, not $14 million. And so if you could trade Mason Plumlee and like Juan Hernan Gomez and a pick for like Trevor Ariza and get that, and then you could dump Trevor Ariza if you needed to next year. And I think that's an option.
I think that Denver is a marketable place. Like, as an NBA prospective yes. free agent, coming to Denver is not a bad idea. That's a growing area just in America. Let's not talk about basketball sure. for a second. Growing area in America. And I think that would be an interesting place. There's a relative home field advantage, too, when you're playing in Denver that you don't get many other places. That's an intriguing core with Jamal Murray and Jokic, who is, all intents and purposes, one of the best players in the NBA. Like, I think
yes.
among top 15 at the very least in the NBA. And he's not going to get any worse. Like, his skill set where he is right now, he's already a big, lumbering, slower guy. Like,
right.
He can't really fall off too far. I don't know. Like, that, you could realistically sell me, if I was a really good NBA player, on coming into a Denver team and making a championship run, particularly as the Warriors dynasty seems to be finally coming to its end. That's an intriguing spot. So yeah, freeing up $44 million is great, but I need to have somebody to spend that $44 million on if I were to get rid of Plumlee and Millsap in that case.
Right. And that's always the risk you run in free agency. It's why the 76ers traded for Jimmy Butler. They're like, we can't lose out on free agency again. We just got to get someone locked up now. And so I think that's the point you're bringing up. Very important. It would be a big risk to lose Millsap, but it's kind of I mean, $30 million. If you're choosing to have Millsap, and I would understand running the team back. I would get that because yeah. your core is so young.
Right.
Jokic is 23. Harris is 24. Jamal Murray's 21. I mean, Will Barton's on the older side of that core at 27. And yeah, it helps when the star of your team is a completely unselfish player. One of the most unselfish players in the league in terms of like, his ability to score the basketball versus how much he loves passing.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think that helps a lot. It may not attract a lot of, like if you're a ball handler and that's what you like to do, like a real point guard, or it might not be your favorite, but I always thought Jimmy Butler would have been a good fit for them theoretically. Mm. You know, even a couple of years back, but yeah, I think if they can find a way to get rid of Mason Plumlee's money and turn down Paul Millsap's player option, I think they would be an attractive free agent destination.
Well, we're probably not taking into account Paul Millsap's ability as a leader either. Like,
I agree. Yeah.
I don't know if we can really dismiss the fact that the Nuggets turnaround has coincided with Paul Millsap being on that team. Now, he has a lot offensively and defensively, of course, on the actual court, but maybe there's more of a leadership aspect that we're not aware of, not really being in the locker room or whatever else, that Paul Millsap could have. There's always the case too, where they decline the team option and then re-sign him to a lower deal, maybe not like a Dirk Nowitzki type thing, which is realistic. Like, he might enjoy his time in Denver, but simply just being overpaid at this point in his career, which a lot of people probably assumed would happen when he signed that initial deal with the Nuggets.
Right, like if they just extended him 2 years for 15,
right,
or 3 years for like eight apiece or something, just like maneuvering it that way.
And there could be some sweetheart deal later on in his career where he gets a front office position or something like that. Like, it's not to say that Paul Millsap has never had a home. Like, I think I know him best as an Atlanta Hawk player,
right?
But certainly if he were to make his bones with the Nuggets here towards the end of his career, that can be his legacy, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that's an important thing to consider when you're a guy that's 33 years old, hasn't won a championship, but has been on the cusp of championship winning teams like he has been. There's some incentive there where maybe not getting as much money as I possibly can is a determining factor in a new contract.
Yeah, and a lot of players choose the longer-term financial stability over the one-year hitter. So, yeah, definitely a possibility.
All right, well, before we get to more of the the NBA news that occurred just over this past week, first news line from Hims. A new wellness brand for men. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. And the thing is, when you start to notice your hair loss, it's too late. So I ask you, do you want a bald spot to pop up or hairline to recede? Or do you want to have some notice first, Alex? Now I'll toss to you, because there's a real possibility that my hair could be gone by the end of 35. Like, that's legitimate. You're a little bit younger than me, so you don't have to worry about that in the rearview mirror so close, but I'll give that to you.
Sure. No, I would want to do something about it first. I don't want the Evan Fournier look, anything like that.
Well, I always think of the Breshad Perriman look, who is an NFL player, of course, but he was a first round pick for the Ravens, yet he looks like he's 45 years old. Like, it's a nasty look. And honestly, what I'd recommend to Perriman, or recommend to you, just try forhims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. And Hims connects you with real doctors and medical grade solutions to treat hair loss. You answer a few quick questions, the doctor will review and prescribe you. No waiting room, no awkward in-person doctor visits. Hello, sign me up for that. I love that. No, those are always uncomfortable for me. And I'll save you hours by going to forhims.com. Order now. RotoWire listeners get a free trial of, or free month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. So see website for full details. This would cost you hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. So go to forhims.com/RWBasketball. That's forhims.com/RWBasketball. forhims.com/RWBasketball. All right. Somebody that probably is losing a lot of hair, I would imagine, is Bulls fans.
Right.
Certainly, whether or not be the coaches. I mean, you can make an argument that after the 108-89 loss to the Kings, maybe there's a scenario where you could see, oh man, I'm blanking on our new coach for the Bulls.
Jim Boylan.
Like, yeah. you could imagine that almost all of his hair is gone at this point, right?
I think it is, yeah. I think, yeah, before he took the job, even the anticipation, as soon as he heard Fred Hoiberg was out, all of it just immediately fell out.
And of course, this follows the 56-point loss to the Boston Celtics on Saturday night, which drew a lot of primetime coverage from ESPN and other outlets. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it was such a historically bad loss, and players threatened to skip practice. It was after this, right? But they settled on having team meetings Sunday, and that was a 1-2 hour players only session, and the other held with new head coach Jim Boylan and the staff in lieu of practice. So that's great. Cool. Like, we could have a 2 hour practice after getting our butts whipped, or we can just have team meetings instead. This is the past 15 game losing streak for the Bulls overall. It doesn't get much uglier than this at this point, right?
No, Not really. I mean, at the point, I mean, not even the Suns are trying to like not show up. Like the from what I heard, it kind of the whole situation came about because Boylan essentially pulled everyone out during that 56 point loss and was like, hey, we're good. We don't need to do this. We can get better in practice. And then he was going to practice on a back to back. He's going to have them do suicides. Those aren't things that happen in the NBA. Those are things that happen like in college and in high school. It's pretty hard. Like I was listening to the Ringer podcast. Like it's true. It's hard to get someone who's making $20 million to run suicides. They just like don't want to do that anymore. They want to play basketball. And so the team was mad. They were thinking of like, hey, maybe we all just hang out at someone's house instead of going to practice. Like they were basically just going to like not show up.
It's a mutiny.
It's a mutiny. They were just going to not show up at all. And it's just very strange because everyone came into the season like with the understanding, like who thought the Bulls were going to be good? Did they think they were going to be good? And even if they did, the Fred Hoiberg firing was like really weird to me because I don't know what he was supposed to do with this team, right? Because
and it was always changing, never fitting his mold.
And the Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis and Lauri Markkanen were all out for like a month, like at the same time, at least a month. And so like, how are you winning when, you know, you're starting like the starting lineup just isn't great. You're still like Justin Holiday's playing 40 minutes a game. Ryan Arcidiacono, I think is how you pronounce his last name, is starting at point guard. Like, what are you expecting out of this team? I'm just not.
Well, okay. So I'll pose this to you. You're right. Nobody out there thought the Bulls were going to be a good team. Maybe they could compete for an Eastern Conference playoff spot by
35 wins
of the eighth or seventh seed, because that seems perpetually available for a 35 win team.
Right.
But that wasn't realistic.
No,
that wasn't going to happen. I think that there are some things that you can have as an NBA organization that the Bulls have not shown. A, team chemistry. Do you see the Suns punching out each other on a week to week basis? Now, of course the Bulls have not done that, but Mirotić got slammed by Bobby Portis last year, which ruined really any sort of potential for that team to be good, to develop any sort of team chemistry.
Yeah, Mirotić is great.
Yeah, and then they had to kind of deal him for pennies last year.
Yeah.
I mean, and now the Pelicans are kind of making a spot for a Western Conference run, in part because they acquired Mirotić. You have not seen team chemistry at all during the Hoiberg era. Jimmy Butler, of course, too. Dwayne Wade, like Rajon Rondo. That still happened under him. We have not seen that at all. And they were supposed to be a bad team last year. And even if you're a bad team, you should be a team. And we haven't seen that under the Bulls so far with Hoiberg's tenure.
Right. They just got a bunch of guys who seem to be in it for themselves, which is not great. Like Zach LaVine, he shoots at will, doesn't play a ton of defense. Same with Jabari Parker. That whole thing was a mess. I mean, it was just, he came out and said like, they don't pay me to play defense. He's just like, doesn't really, it's just, he came into the year clearly out of shape.
Right.
It's not great. Like, yeah.
So if you're a bad team, you want to have team chemistry. Nope. They definitely don't have
that. They don't.
If you're a bad team, I just want some structure. Like the Magic have been a bad team for a while. And frankly, their structure is they're a bad team. Like I get confused on what they do with their center, power forward, small forward positions on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
But you can kind of expect some things to be the same when it comes to the Magic, when it comes to the Suns. I literally have no idea what the Bulls are going to do on a day-to-day basis.
No.
What was the plan behind signing Jabari Parker? What was that going to accomplish? You're a buy low on a guy that for his entire career has only been offensive, nothing else, on a team that frankly already has a lot of offense in Zach LaVine and things like that. They don't have a lot of defense and they have a lot of me first players. What was the decision behind that? That's another thing with the Bulls. And now I can't place the Parker signing on Hoiberg, but I can place it on the fact that they haven't had structure for forever under his 10 years as a coach, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the first year he took over the team, he thought he was taking over a rebuilding team. Like that's what they hired him for. It's what you kind of hire a college coach for. It's like you hired a college coach, you talk up all the young guys. And then he ended up with a team whose three leading minutes guys were Jimmy Butler, Pau Gasol, and Derrick Rose. That was his first year. So it's like, that's not what he signed up for. And then the next year, kind of the same situation. Like he's this guy. They didn't fire him. If they were going to fire him, they should have fired him then.
Right.
Then it was Jimmy Butler, Robin Lopez, Rondo as their top three minutes getters the next year. And then I don't know what he was, I mean, these past 2 years, I don't know what he was supposed to do. And like, I get that this happens sometimes where it's like a coach has been there for a while. Maybe they just feel bad for him. And they're like, there's no point in really, what's the point in keeping him around? If that makes sense. It's like, is he going to coach this team for the next 5 years while they get out of this rebuild? Or do we just want to like hit the reset button on the entire thing? That I think is what happened.
Yes.
But,
and I don't blame anyone for doing that because right. Again, if you can't have team chemistry, if you can't have any sort of structure or style for your team, what does a head coach provide a team that's stinking other than a body to get angry for the fans to get angry at when they're stinking? Jim Boylan probably is never going to get another job as an NBA coach again. Mm-hmm. So I don't blame him for trying to implement some practice techniques and some accountability to what the lineup is. Cause that's what I thought benching all those guys was during that 56 point blowout.
Sure.
And it could have been worse. Like if you were, I tuned in, I think for the end of the third quarter and I saw the score and I was like, what is happening? And I watched the game. I was like, oh, I get it. I get it. I understand entirely. So for him, try to implement some accountability, some technique or practice structure, or even some game plan that is something that the NBA needs to have for every 30 of their franchises, I get it. Mm-hmm. Now, from the player's perspective, why do I need to listen to a guy that is not going to be my head coach next year? And yes, okay, so like there are probably in this situation both people being wrong.
Right.
Right. And that's fine to admit and acknowledge sometimes, but you look at the Bulls and what they have been for so long, and I understand why Hoiberg was fired, and I understand from some perspective what Boylan's trying to do. And I think there's not a lot of people talking about that side of things, more just how big of a mess the Bulls are as an overall general arcing concept.
Right, and because they have some talented like young players, they still do. I mean, Chris Dunn's alive.
Like, yes.
Bobby Portis, for his faults, is alive. Wendell Carter Jr., very promising young center. They have Markkanen, who's an incredible player. For his age, definitely. And like Levine and Jabari, that's kind of their own. That's kind of a whole separate thing.
I like Levine, and I know
I do too.
I know I shouldn't. That's like one of my poison pill kind of guys in the NBA that I know I shouldn't, but I do.
The Kings liked him a lot too. Try to get him on that team. That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. It's not out of all the tanking teams, they do seem among the most dysfunctional, even though they have maybe the most talent, like overall talent of any of the tanking teams. So Absolutely. It's very strange in that way.
And I think they should also be a team that really seriously entertains acquiring salary, even if it means giving up some of their good talent. Cause they do have talent. We both agree they have talent. I'm astounded by how bad the team chemistry is and has been for a long time on that team. And if it means giving up some of the good players to get some salary, get some more picks and really reset this thing, then I think that's the direction they have to seriously consider, because you've already pressed the button once with Hoiberg being fired. That was good.
Right.
If you want to really just clean this thing out, let's go all the way and really pick who you want to build your franchise around and then push everything else out.
Right.
You can't go much worse than what they are right now, because they are, they're the Kings. Like, they're kind of the laughing stock of the NBA right now. And only the Kings are allowed to be the Kings in the NBA. You don't want to be Sacramento in this situation.
And Sacramento's 2 games over .500.
I know. I know. That's what I'm saying. You don't want to be the Kings. Yet here the Bulls are right now in a situation where they are the laughing stock of the NBA. And they're seeing the Kings of all people, a 500 plus record.
Right.
In the Western Conference.
I have to agree. I mean, like I said, like all their young talent, but certain guys just, I wouldn't be surprised if I saw Bobby Portis traded, not even because of the practice incident where he punched Mirotić, but just because where are the minutes? You have Markkanen and you have Carter Jr.
Right.
Where is Portis playing? So if you trade Portis for salary, I get that. And
a pick and another asset that could end up being something. And for an NBA franchise acquiring Portis, why wouldn't you? Like he is a talented player. He clearly needs a change of scenery. I don't know. Let's move on to a team that somehow is less of a disaster than the Bulls. The Cleveland Cavaliers, Tristan Thompson is out 2 to 4 weeks with a sprained foot. The first point of this headline is holy crap, this is actually an important headline.
It is.
That Tristan Thompson was a fantasy relevant player, particularly DFS-wise.
Very.
But like the last month or so, he has been a double-double machine. So the fact that he's out 2 to 4 weeks is a prominent injury for fantasy owners and a prominent injury for the Cavaliers overall. So likely meaning Larry Nance and getting more minutes potentially. You're starting five right now for the Cavaliers would be Colin Sexton, Jordan Clarkson, Rodney Hood, Osman, Larry Nance, and that's bad. Like that's very bad. They have J.R. Smith, just not on the team, just out there, hoping that somebody
out there somewhere.
J.R. Smith's in the ether right now.
Right.
That's really what's happening. And hopefully they get an asset for him. Again, I have no idea, and I never understood why anyone thought they could get something for J.R. Smith, but there are maybe a individual or two in Cleveland that believes that's possible. Cool. Other than that, though, there's not a lot that they can really do to make this team better other than what we just talked about at the start of the broadcast, acquiring salary.
Yeah. I mean, they traded Kyle Korver. Actually, I like that trade. Burks is a legitimately, like, it's kind of like to be seen on how good he actually, because he dealt with a lot of injuries throughout earlier in his career. It's kind of stunting his development. Like, he's 27 right now. Mm. When I think of Alec Burks, my first thought is like, this dude might be like 24. It's a little, you know, but he's an interesting player and they got picks out of it.
I want to touch on the Alec Burks thing real quick before you go on a different tangent, which is good. I like that deal for a variety of different reasons. Getting the 2 second round picks was fantastic. But to me, Burks is an asset to be an asset. So what that means is kind of what I was talking about with John Henson with the rejuvenation thing. You're going to give Burks a lot of minutes, I would imagine, in the coming days and weeks and months of your really bad 2018 season. And maybe he ends up flourishing to the point where a team convinces themselves he's their best sixth man or seventh man option, where you then get another asset. So you're turning Kyle Korver, who, let's be honest, is a three-point shooter, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. He can do some defensive stuff, but I don't know if I'd want him on the court extensively other than provide three-point shooting.
Right.
Into 2 second-round picks, and then probably another player that would get a second-round pick in Alec Burks. Like, that's good. That's a good deal for the Cavaliers, who I don't feel like they had a lot. They had not a lot of abilities with Kyle Korver, and they're somehow turning him into three assets for a franchise that needs just assets.
Yeah, and they lucked into that trade because the Jazz are playing so poorly.
Right.
Like, if the Jazz were playing fine, that trade probably doesn't happen.
And they don't get anything near that.
I don't think so. I mean, they might closer to the deadline or something when things shake out, but always good to get, you know, deals done sooner if you're pretty sure you're not getting anything better. And yeah, like, the only assets they really have left, Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson. That's it. Nobody, I mean, if we're considering Alec Burks, but that's kind of like nuanced. That's all they have left that they would probably be interested in trading that could even net some sort of return. I mean, you're not really getting anything for Channing Frye or J.R. Smith. You already dealt George Hill. Maybe you're going to trade Rodney Hood. Maybe you trade Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson. They're 26. What are you doing with them?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like, that was where I was going to go to when you're, well, like, that's the direction that if you're going to be going all the way in this trading stuff, and they should, Jordan Clarkson to get another sixth-man candidate. And those guys seem to be, like, just they fetch way more of the trade deadline than you'd think they would. Like, last year when we were even talking about, the guy for he played for the Kings at the time, Evans.
Oh, Tyreke Evans?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, I was surprised that there was talks about him getting a first-round pick or, like, around there, multiple first-round picks. That's the best-case scenario for a guy like Rodney Hood or Jordan Clarkson in particular, because, again, like the Clippers have made Jamal Williams way longer than he should have been as a relevant asset and, like, team chemistry kind of guy and really what he provides scoring. Why can't Clarkson do the same thing in that capacity?
Yeah, I mean, he's not... Clarkson, he's just a scorer. I mean, if any team that tries to convince themselves that Jordan Clarkson is anything but, like, you know, 13 points a game off your bench because he doesn't pass.
I said Jamal Williams, Lou Williams.
Yeah, I knew what you meant.
Thank you. Just thinking Packers again.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, if you watch Jordan Clarkson play, it's a lot of coming off screens. And then when the defense is just standing in front of him, he's just like, meh, screw it. I'll shoot a 14-footer every time. and that can be fine. Like, that can win you a playoff game. If he gets hot, that can be 25 points. But yeah, I mean, even if you're getting 2 second-round picks for each of these guys, hey, you just got 4 second-round picks.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's okay. I understand second-round picks don't mean anything sometimes.
It's kind of shooting fish in a barrel, but you're going to hit a fish eventually.
I feel like there's been more second-round picks that have value in recent years than we've seen, even in their 2000s through 2012. Like, there's a lot more specific strengths and weaknesses teams are identifying in the second round picks that can help teams. Cheap bench assets are still bench assets who are cheap. Like, that's okay. Right. And that's kind of what second round picks can turn into. Best case scenario is Malcolm Brogdon, right? Like, that's one of those guys that was a little bit older. A lot of people didn't want to invest a high pick in him because he's 23, 24 entering his rookie season, but has a lot of promise. And then you can go the other way investing a second-round pick in a 19- or 20-year-old who you can stash in the G League and kind of build and develop and make into a scorer or rebound, whatever it is.
I mean, Chris Middleton was a second-rounder. Like, it's just stuff like that happens all the time. And you just want as many as possible. That's what the Process Sixers were doing. And I actually wanted to bring up the Process Sixers. So I looked up. I thought this lineup that the Cavs are running might be as bad as a prime time Process Sixers lineup. So I just grabbed a random loss from the 10 win season later in the year. I think it was against Charlotte. Their starters were Ish Smith, Robert Covington, Isaiah Cannon, Jeremy Grant, and Nerlens Noel. My question to you, who wins that game between Sexton, Clarkson, Hood, Osmond, Nance against Smith, Covington, Cannon, Jeremy Grant, Nerlens Noel?
Oh man, neither team scores over 90, right?
Yeah, it's like 85 to 79.
Right. That I had to make sure we clarified that because I don't see anyone that scores. Like, Ish Smith always had the possibility, even when he was with the Bucks, like having one of those weird 20 and 15 kind of games and then doesn't score 20 points the rest of the year kind right. of thing. Like, he's very capable of that. You look at the Sexton team of the Cavaliers, like, does anyone really have that capability? Maybe Jordan Clarkson? I think I lean towards the random Process 76ers team that picks up the W because of defense alone. Like,
you're right about the defense. That Nerlens, Jeremy Grant, Robert Covington, that would shut a team down 3 through 5. Like, Rodney Hood, Chucky Osmond, Larry Nance are not scoring a single point.
No, they're not. No, if those two teams played 10 times, I bet you the Process 76ers, which is what they'll be formally named now for the rest of this podcast, its career, they're going to be winners of 6 or 7 out of those 10 games, I believe, because they're just like that Cavaliers team scores maybe 40 in 3 quarters, it feels like.
You know, ESPN or other networks always do like the, what are the Westgate odds for the Jordan Bulls versus the Golden State Warriors? Where are the odds for that? We'll put -4 on the Process 76ers. I'm not really sure. But that just goes to show how, how bad the Cavs are, but also B, how quickly they've turned this into, which is what they should have been doing the whole time, a true rebuild, tear down after LeBron leaves. It can be a blessing in disguise because you don't have to think about it. You're like, we're rebuilding now. And they signed Kevin Love. They thought about it too hard. That was their problem. They were like, but what if? And so, yeah, the Kevin Love thing's interesting too. Like, do they trade him? Do they hang on to him? I don't know how many wins Kevin Love actually gets you anymore as a player in this scenario.
We don't have enough time in the day to discuss the Kevin Love thing, but I do anticipate that we will have this discussion at some point in the near future, because I do believe the Cavs, if they really want to go full throttle on this, and they should, will be trading Kevin Love in the near future. And much like Trevor Ariza, who, again, we can't really discuss what's going to happen with Trevor Ariza because he's not actually eligible to be traded until next week, and I think that's probably a proper time to be talking about what Ariza could and will fetch in the coming weeks. Kevin Love's kind of in the same boat, where a lot of the assets you could project for him are going to depend on players that were signed in this offseason or even past offseasons that had high contracts that just haven't been able to live up to it. That's kind of what he's going to have to fetch at this point.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've spent almost 40 minutes talking about basketball, and none of it has been about the fantasy perspective. So, of course, RotoWire is tied with DraftKings, and the NBA season is already here. I mean, like, we're to the point where we're almost to the Christmas games, which are always kind of like the official start of the NBA season, in my opinion.
Right.
And you can go to rotowire.com/DraftKings and sign up for a new account and make a $10 deposit to get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription. That's right. Like, free 6 months access to all tools and sports on rotowire.com, which include DFS lineup optimizers, weekly rankings, premium articles, full season draft software, and much more. All for $10, which you can then enter into contests, potentially win more. So we're super excited to bring you this deal. And if you want access right away, go to rotowire.com/DraftKings and follow the instructions. Eligibility restrictions apply, and new DraftKings users only. So see DraftKings.com for details. Let's start with the highest available DraftKings players for today's 3-game slate. Mm-hmm. We have James Harden at 10,700 against the Trailblazers. Damian Lillard on the other side of things, 9,700 against the Rockets, and Kawhi Leonard at 9,400 against the Clippers. The highest over-under, again, 3 games for Tuesday's slate. Raptors at Clippers at 223, and then the lowest over-under, Suns-Spurs 216. Largest spread, of course, is that Spurs-Suns game. Suns are looking like one of the worst teams in the NBA besides the Bulls, and the small spread, Raptors-Clippers. So I'll give you this right now before we really get into the players. I would imagine the Raptors-Clippers is the best game to watch for today's slate, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm interested in like just from an actual watchability, actual watchability perspective, Portland Houston will be interesting because of the Houston dynamic. They just got, I mean, Luka Doncic like destroyed them late in that game. The other night, I forgot what night that was, but he's hitting step backs on Capella. It was ridiculous. So they're trying to get out of the cellar. Portland is trying to climb towards the top of the Western Conference. It's just these two teams clashing. But yeah, as far as games that you might want to stack in your DFS lineup, because there are only three, I think Raptors Clippers provides a lot of options, and we should double check. And I'm going to, on if Lou Williams is available or not, because he left, I think I'm pretty sure the Clippers played Monday, and he left that game with a hamstring injury, which are hamstring injuries are always
well, they're tough, especially in the NBA.
Yeah, when you're older. There's no news on him right now. This is of 1:18 p.m. Central Time. I would not surprise me if he was out, so that also opens up value for like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. It'll be his first missed game, actually, Lou Williams, of the year. So we don't know exactly how Doc Rivers will deal with that. But you could go with Lou Williams. You could go Patrick Beverley. Maybe you lean on Danilo Gallinari and Tobias Harris more. So there's a lot of interesting stuff in that game.
Let's touch on a guard for this guy or that guy very quickly. So Damian Lillard at 9,700 against the Rockets, or DeMar DeRozan against the Suns at 9,200. Like, this is probably going to be one of the higher price decisions you'll have to make for your lineup. You would think DeRozan makes sense because, again, the Suns are struggling so much this season and somebody has to be scoring for the Spurs. But on the other hand, Lillard has the opportunity and has the higher points potential just on the fact that the matchup alone, like the Rockets have struggled to stop the guard spot overall, and they have the highest over-under of the evening.
Yeah, I wanted to bring this up because my main concern with this Suns game, Suns versus Spurs, is the blowout potential. Because, and specifically DeRozan's averaging 38 minutes over the past three games. That's too much. Like Greg Popovich keeps saying, like, we're playing these guys too much, etc. If there's any opportunity to pull DeRozan from this game and play him 28 minutes, play him 25 minutes in a blowout, I think Coach Pop will do it. So I am staying very far away from any of the main Spurs players today because of that. And so in this case, I would go more Lillard because I just, this game could be a blowout, who knows, but Spurs should handily defeat the Suns. So I'd be afraid of the blowout potential with DeRozan.
I'm just scrolling through the Suns schedule, and this is almost astounding to realize there's been less than five games where win or loss, they've remained within 10 points.
I see that. Yeah.
Like, that's incredible.
It's either they either get a blowout win,
right,
or they blowout loss.
There's the win over the Bulls. I'm sorry, the Bucks, which should never have happened again as a Bucks fan. That's embarrassing. A 2-point win over the Grizzlies. And yeah, like this is kind of astounding. I had no idea that this was the way the Suns have been playing. Like, I knew they're bad. You look at the record, you knew they're bad, but not to the point where there's only been four or five decisions all year, one way or another, win or loss, that they remain within 10 points. This is a very, very, very real possibility that a lot of Spurs could end up getting their minutes cut down a little bit by 3, 4, 5, 6, if and when they end up getting ahead or behind, I guess.
Yeah.
The Suns.
Yeah. I'm staying away from like Aldridge, DeRozan. I'll talk about it later. Who's in my, I'm gonna, a little teaser. I have one Spurs player in my lineup. Oh. You'll find out who it is later. yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move over to the forward. Gallinari at 6,500 against the Raptors, or Siakam against 6,300 against the Clippers. This is a forward on forward matchup, although I don't anticipate that they'll be covering one another tonight like that.
We might a little bit, because the Raptors just, it's kind of a whirlwind of guys. Yeah. They switch a lot. So Danny Green might end up on Gallo for some times. Kawhi Leonard, you got to shut down Gallo, got to put Kawhi Leonard on him. But I think I would lean more towards Siakam if I had to choose one or the other. The $200 savings is nice. I feel like they're both about 30 to 35 fantasy points that I'd want out of them. Toronto's defense does kind of scare me. Not that the Clippers are a joke, because Clippers are good for real. But yeah, Gallo might have Leonard on him for Kawhi for some portions of the game. Gallo has higher upside. He's got a 52-point fantasy outing the other night. But I think if Lou Williams is out, I could easily justify playing Gallinari over Siakam because of the increased scoring responsibilities that other players are going to would have theoretically on the Clippers would need to have. But as things sit right now, I think I would take the $200 price savings, go Siakam.
Well, full disclosure, as I ask this question, I did not put together a lineup for tonight's slate of games, and I anticipate you probably will. You talk about those 200 savings quite a bit. Is that particularly relevant with only three games being played? I mean, you have only six teams to choose from. That $200 feels like there's going to be not as much price-saving opportunities elsewhere,
right,
where you kind of have to make that choice if you have it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the case, because, you know, if you construct a lineup and let's say you have like $700 left over and you kind of go through and you're like, oh, who can I move? Can I bump anyone up? Mm-hmm. The price jumps are so big. You're like, can I bump this person up $700? It's like maybe there's a dude for $100 more and then it's like $1,200 more. And you're like, well, OK, so you got to kind of make more changes at the margins sometimes with that. So that can make a difference. To me, this is almost a wash. Like I was going back and forth a little bit, but I think it's an interesting conversation to have. You could lean Gallo if Lou Williams is out.
All right. Well, I'll give you 2 minutes to talk about your DFS lineup for today's Tuesday slate.
Sure.
Again, I didn't really put together one, but I think that's fine. Then we'll kind of let you run it down, and then we'll kind of conclude things for the rest of the podcast.
Sure. Very news heavy podcast.
Yeah, which is fun. I enjoyed it. I like this quite a bit, especially when there's only three games. It ended up working out really well.
It did. So I'm going to go with Damian Lillard at point guard against Houston. Houston's kind of a mess. Chris Paul looks a step slow. Wouldn't surprise me if Lillard at least got, you know, like 50 fantasy points. 9,700 is not a bad price for him at all. Surprised it was that low. DeAnthony Melton, and I feel like I do have to say this, is the Suns' starting point guard right now because Devin Booker's been out. He's 4,300 against the Spurs. Talk about blowout potential. He's a guy who's shown he can get 30 fantasy points. He's at 4,300. You can go at this spot. You could also go, I think he's shooting guard eligible. I should double check. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
He is. Yeah. I already looked at that. Yep.
If Lou Williams is out, that also makes sense here. Small forward, I have Gallinari against Toronto. Talked about that earlier. In this scenario, I chose Gallinari over Siakam because this is a tournament lineup for me. I want the higher upside. Siakam, I think, has a higher floor. TJ Warren at power forward at 6,000 against San Antonio. He played yesterday, Monday, 12 minutes coming off a minutes restriction because he missed five straight games. I think, and this is important to double check for the news to see if Warren is cleared to play regular minutes, because if he's cleared to play at like 30 minutes a game, he's a guy who can get you like 40 fantasy points. The Suns just need to play a competitive basketball game and they need Warren to play well. They're going to give him a ton of shots. He might take 25 shots. I think it's a gamble you might have to take if you're in a tournament setting. And then at center, I have Jakob Poeltl for the Spurs. That's the Spurs player I'm taking. He's at 4,100 against Phoenix. He's got two over the past four games. He's got two games where he's gotten at least 30 fantasy points, and he's only at 4,100. He's only at 4,100, and we've seen him get 20 fantasy points in the past. This could be a blowout. You might see him play 25 minutes. DeAndre Ayton, not great at defense. The Suns kind of bleed fantasy points to centers. I think that's a good risk to take if you're trying to save money somewhere. Then at guard, I have James Harden because I just don't really like too many of the other guard options on the slate. So I'll play it up. Al-Farouq Aminu, I have at 4,700 against Houston. I don't think he's going to keep playing amazing all year. He's like 30 fantasy points every night for the past like five games. It's not going to stay up all year, but at 4,700, I think he's like 6,100 or 6,300 on FanDuel. Like the price difference is crazy. So I'm very comfortable playing him on DraftKings. And then in my utility, huge gamble, I'm going Boban at 3,800 against Toronto. He's been playing. I think Doc will use him against the Valanciunas, Serge Ibaka front court, especially when Valanciunas is in. Valanciunas plays about 18 minutes a game. If you get Boban for 18 minutes a game, that could very easily be like 25 fantasy points. So I think this is a tournament lineup for me. I think he has plenty of upside, has enough risk, still has James Harden and Damian Lillard in it. So I think I have a high ceiling in it too. I feel I've usually when I feel good about a lineup, it does bad. So that's what you can expect tonight. This will put up 100 fantasy points tonight total.
Yeah, that's the rule of thumb when it comes to lineups. Whenever you feel really good about it, it ends up doing really bad. And that's the perfect way to end the podcast, too, with Boban. Like, I love that guy so much. He looks so dorpy. I don't know. Like, I just made up a word. He's dorpy, but that's fine. All right, well, we'll be back hopefully either next. I think it's going to be next Tuesday again. This feels like it's working best for our schedules and certainly RotoWire's, too. So we'll be back next Tuesday for the newest edition of the NBA podcast. Hopefully we'll have more trades to talk about, or potential for trades to talk about too. So that's always a lot of fun. Until then, stay safe and set a great lineup.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.